any questions or anything to say? And as usual, feel free to come central if you like.
We have to find, in a way, our own practice. How sometimes we can get involved in the mind that we can think one way is a correct when probably it's not. So how to build more, how to know if we're taking the correct one or confusing it.
Could you hear the question? Yep. Yep. We do our best, knowing that if I'm more heavily into thinking, then likely that some parts will fall away with practice. Some things will shift and change in what I'm practicing. And as it comes more into us as our center of living comes more into us, then we can feel our practice better. And then it still may shift and adapt to what we need and what's possible. Sometimes I like the two questions, out of what's possible, what's good? Out of what's possible, what is good? And out of what is good, what is possible? And then to experiment with those, what matches those, what's good and possible. To experiment with those is a refinement, so it gets more, we get good at feeling. For the signs of what can't be felt, so we get good at feeling the flowers in the tree, unless we break open the tree to look for the flowers. And we could start to feel flowers live here even though it's wintertime. I can feel flowers may come here. And we can lie down under the cherry tree in the winter sun for a few months, thinking maybe I'm crazy, but I feel flowers. So sometimes we have that, maybe I'm crazy, but. And in our experimentation, life also, like, bumps up against where I have added through an idea to what is needed to be done. So there's what I need to do and how that meets with what can be done without my doing. That's what practice is, where I sort of do my part and that's met by what is done for us, so to speak, what happens by itself. usually we find our way by having an idea. I will meditate 1 hour a day, or I do meditate 1 hour a day. Not only like I plan to, but actually I do, let's say. And then it starts to happen, we notice that the way we're relating to that idea of meditate 1 hour a day, I meditate 1 hour a day, there can be a dryness. We notice it's like checking something off the list or whatever. So then is when we might pause and feel, what is it that I would, like in my teacher's words yesterday, what else would you want to do? Meaning, when I'm doing that, when that's part of my life, it might not be 24 hours a day, that, like, he didn't sit cross-legged on his bed 24 hours a day, but six times a day, let's say, for no reason, already enlightened, sitting on his bed, cross-legged, eyes closed. Because what else would you want to do? So, and it's up to us to feel the difference between what I think I want to do and how exciting, because other people told me it's exciting. Other people told me that means you're a good person. And so to feel the difference between that, which we could call excitement, and another good, a different way of being that also feels good, but it's not necessarily excitement. There are moments that it's exciting, usually because of our idea about what's happening. Oh, I'm about to be enlightened. And so we start to feel that gradually, like better and better, not like better and better. So that my talk yesterday was saying it's through joy that we know, and then adding to joy that through lightness that we know, and adding to that that even though it's difficult and we'd like to make a superhighway, we'd like to make it big and easy and noticeable and known, and that it only goes from here to there, kind of, that instead we find the beauty in actually that it is slow, that I don't have to hurry, that it's without any pressure, meaning with less pressure, less often, that I can feel my feet beloved of the earth. And that's good. It's an exciting idea, and it's also, there's a goodness in the experience. And we just keep letting our system learn the difference between excitement and good. And then our natural calling towards the good, that kind of good, the down good, takes us. So I wanted to mention, to talk about this, we can call calling. Wendell Berry has been using the word song, a song that could lead us. It's a good image for where let's say something in us feels a calling for or loves that living quality in the tree so much that sometimes when we think and feel ourselves not to be in touch with that living quality, we break open the tree to say, where are the flowers? Or maybe there aren't any flowers. I'm going to prove that there aren't any flowers because I'm so mad that I don't feel the living quality. And so to just feel how easily, from our nakedness, vulnerability, how easily we go both ways. We go into vulnerability that allows us to be sensitive to feel the living quality without knowing where it is, because it isn't somewhere. And also so easily in the vulnerability, nakedness, that we go to lack, not enough, etc. Not having, not being in touch with the living quality. And as we said yesterday, when I'm in not having the living quality, it's very hard to feel the living quality. When through the same vulnerability as the like center line that can go either way, it is also easy and often through ease, quietud, relajación, that we notice how easily and beautifully the living quality comes through in surprising ways that we could describe after. The description is off while it's happening. So a big part of our practice is finding the chance during the day, maybe even during each day, that we can find, it happens many times a day, so maybe each day we happen to remember, this is lack, or small mind, or fear, etc. And from here, it feels as if there is no living quality anywhere, or at least not for me. They all have it, or whatever. But it's not far to go if we kind of try to reach through the skin of the small mind and feel even just a little bit of big mind, of love, of living quality. And from there, it's easy to include small mind. It's easy. It is actually easy to include because it mostly just wants love. It mostly just wants big. There's a funny story I told a few people last week already, but it comes for today as well. There was yet another guy from the U.S. I don't know his name. But he starts his story by saying that he must have been kind of done with life because he accepted this particular job that was so likely to end in his death and destruction. And he must have known it somehow. So the job was offered by a big organization. And they were offering a job to someone that would likely end in his death and destruction. So they offered and he said yes. These things happen every day. It's not good. So he said yes. So he went from the yeah? Okay, a big organization that you all know, you've all heard of it, offered a job to a man. The man knew and the organization knew that very likely the man would die in the job. And he said yes. So he went to Russia. And the job was to take out, that means kill, a man who was the head of a mafia. Do you know mafia? And do you know mafia inside yourself? This is a story about also our inside. Where rather than bother to live, we take the job that ends in death and destruction, which also involves death and destruction. So that's going away from what was in the text called the soul, who can be dominated but doesn't dominate. It doesn't have the quality of aggression, but it can be. So he went to Russia. The job was about to be successful, which in this particular situation is a pretty confusing word. And then it wasn't. Someone told the boss what was happening. And so this man who'd come from the US was told, end of mission, which meant get rid of your weapon, get rid of your phone, get rid of anything that could tell where you've come from and who hired you and what you are here to do, and do your best. Good luck. So he was doing all that, he'd done all that, and he saw from his window not the guy himself that he had tried to kill, but his people who had their equipment. coming towards him. And there was only sort of one way out and one way in, so they met in the stairwell, more or less, the stairs to his house, his apartment. And he would have been killed, but there was a man. Again, we have the drunkard coming up this week. The drunkard, the one who drinks as a living, so to say, was in the stairs, and somehow, maybe the noise, whatever, grabbed the ankle of the guy who was hurting our guy. And that was enough of a distraction for whatever half of a second for our guy to get away and run to the train and get on the train and go on the long Russian train where he knew there was a safe house. This is also, you know, you asked about struggle. This is a good metaphor for our path sometimes, where there's aggression and we try aggression against aggression. It doesn't work, but we do survive, put it that way. We go to the safe house. In the safe house, there's what a safe house is a little place to be out of the cold where there's food for a week. So he went to the safe house, finally got there from the train station through the snow, etc. Got to the safe house. Close the door. Open the door. There's no food. Nothing. Zero food. What to do? He had some money. Maybe there was some money there, or he had some money. I don't know. He had some money. He eventually, when he was a little bit cleaned up, he went to find people and food, to buy some food. They had a few potatoes, and they were not at all interested in trading them for money. There was so little food in the area. They preferred potatoes to whatever it is, rubles or whatever, the money. So, okay. He goes back to the safe house, which isn't so safe, or isn't nourishing. What to do? What to do? In his sort of state, one time, he hears what couldn't be a car, or it could be a car, the wrong one, coming to the house. And he thinks it's his imagination, but then he does go and check in case it's the wrong car, finding him. The car is gone. There are tracks in the snow, so it's not his imagination. And he looks down and there's a box of food from his sister in the United States there. And he eats. That's the story. Why did I tell that story? At some point, then he has enough strength to get out of the country somehow. I don't know how. Probably he can't tell us how, etc. And he does ask, like, how did that food from my sister get to that in Siberia? And they have a guideline in that organization, which is, do you need to know? Is there a need to know? No. You don't need to know how the package from your sister got to that house in Siberia. So, you don't know. That's the end of the story. So, many times we feel that we need to know how the food from my sister got there. But we don't actually need to know. And it's just enough to get it from the safe house where we could try again. And I think what seems to have happened for him is this guy that he found out that the struggle of living through the difficult terrain of our existence has something that is just better than accepting offers of death and destruction. But it was through accepting the offer that he found it. It was like that kind of shock that for him helped. So, we don't need to know, but we do need sisters and brothers and mamas. Mama is uncle in India. How to know what we need to know, what we do need to know. So mostly what we think we need to know, we probably don't. And sometimes we wish we wouldn't know what comes clear. Sometimes it's like, oh, right. I thought she was being selfish. Okay. That was me. So, Jay Krishnamurti, an Indian gentleman, I can't call him a guy. Because he's very well dressed and a very well dressed guy. How to know what we need to know. So usually we could say there's not a how, and as usual with Jay Krishnamurti, he doesn't really tell us how, but it's still helpful. Our minds are all the time occupied. And if we can hear in my like four-part harmony rap that we're coming together with, occupied like a country that would be dominated, occupied like being in a prison, etc. Like when we're busy with something, when the mind is occupied, it's not free. Like, we can do things in freedom, but usually our mind is occupied, like a country gets occupied. It's through aggression. And it's so easy there to want to come back with more aggression. Aggression? Yeah? I gotta share. And he gives the example of the sannyasi. So, some kind of like a, someone who's made a radical change in their way of living. They've left where they're from. They've left their family. They've left money. They've left wearing whatever clothes they want. They wear certain clothes, certain color. There's a lot of creativity there, but anyway, certain color. The sannyasi, so even someone who's left seemingly it all to be unoccupied is occupied with God, with prayers, etc. So our minds are all the time occupied, the sannyasi, with God, with prayers, and all the other examples that we know so well in ourselves and in other people. And he says, and you have no space. And it gets a bit like, and you, and we have no space. All our minds are all the time occupied, and we have no space. We have the sensation of not having space. And space is necessary, Krishnamurti says. Space also implies an emptiness, a silence, which has immense energy. So in the story of the spy? I don't know if it's a spy, if you're like a hired hitman for an assassin, thank you. A hired murderer from, yes, the US government. Maybe space comes out of weakness in the body, for example, like, and sort of being hopeless. Sometimes space comes through being hopeless. And that's where we have Trungpa's thing of, it's through disappointments that a teacher, whether inner or outer, initiates us or teaches us or helps us as that innocence, that the worn out clothes fall away, fall apart. Space is necessary. So sometimes when we're sick and we can't be so occupied, or we're weak, we can't be so occupied, or when we rest and we're daydreaming, but we're not so occupied in the daydream, and we're, is it a daydream or actually, whoa. So even sleep is a kind of occupation. And sometimes through resting, we find ourselves actually not asleep and actually not awake. And if we hang out there enough, we let something in us lie under that bare cherry tree, as long as we kind of can and feel. We find that in space, space has, silence has, emptiness has immense, so very big energy. And then we start to find where in the vulnerability, a little bit why maybe we go towards small mind, the vulnerability that so easily feels like I don't have enough, I am not enough, etc. Where we could, we can feel that calling that it is possible to fall into, rest into space, silence, non-occupation, nakedness. And we find that there's tremendous energy. What had seemed to be empty wintertime, what had seemed to be no way out and no hope and utter disappointment, so it can feel just like waiting. But with that, like, what else would you do? The energy can be so much bigger than we thought we could be or handle, that we go, whoop, I'll be small. So Krishnamurti continues, jumping a few lines. To understand the order of the universe. So this is why I don't call him a guy. Elegant gentleman. To understand the order of the universe. Did I want to understand the order of the universe? I guess so. If you put it, maybe I can translate to my own words. But yeah, okay. So it could be like an underlying harmony, as we say in Jinshin Jitsu, which is the name of these things that we've been doing, holding, like I said today, this one. This one is a big one today, by the way, the outer ankle. Feeling the underlying harmony, that, or the sense of, afterwards we could see the gracefulness of the unfolding. So not an order that's predictable or controlled or controllable, but that we can find our way to agree with it in the moment and appreciate its beauty as it goes behind us. To understand the order of the universe, then he says, which is without cause. To understand the order of the universe, which has no reason. It has no motive, it has no plan. It has no cause. So we would usually look for an order to say, well, A leads to B, and B leads to C, and C leads to D. Got it. And that's when we get to that safe house and there's no food. To understand the in the worst case. It's also when the sister's food arrives at the door, right? Okay. So to be in the underlying harmony for no reason, which has a goodness for no reason, is it possible to live a daily life without any cause? Is it possible to live a daily life for no reason? Is it possible to let our practice come about? Not because I tried to make my practice or find my practice. And not because I tried to find my practice and make my practice. Is it possible to live a beautiful life for no reason? For no orders, no cause. That is supreme order, Krishnamurti says. Out of that order, we have creative energy. You have creative energy. Meditation is to release that creative energy. So hearing that, there may be some kind of possibility of underlying harmony. There may be order of the universe. For no reason, without cause. Beginningless. And maybe already we can feel that we can live a daily life in the same way, good for no reason, in touch with the goodness that's not excitement, the goodness that just is. And in that, allowing ourselves to be met, to meet and be met by that goodness that's not excitement, that's not from an idea. We have creative energy. Meditation is to release that energy. I love that. Meditation is to release that. So it's partly meditation is our way of coming into contact with what I'm calling the living quality. So as I said yesterday, through joy, through lightness, through what else would you do? Meditation is to release that creative energy. Then even when we're in touch with the beloved in daily life, we're met. Even in the moments where we are at ease and it's good, meditation continues to allow that creative energy, which is also love, to allow that. To be had but not held. To be present in a human body, human being, but not had in the way that we know. To be released wherever it goes. Anything to say? Any question?
Yeah, I asked you this before you spoke, but in the beginning you mentioned in between being awake and asleep.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you about that and how that sort of relates at all to the practice.
Yeah.
Sort of, sorry, like someone get weird physical sensations.
Yeah.
Being sleepy.
Yeah. Could you hear?
No.
No? That thing that I mentioned of sometimes resting and then being rested, there is something that isn't quite asleep and isn't quite awake. So, for example, you notice your body snoring, but you hear it. And it doesn't wake you up. Nor does the like, ugh! Someone heard me or whatever, wake you up. So we're relaxed enough and we feel good company enough somehow that that stays. In that place, I would say maybe it's like sleeping under the cherry tree in wintertime. So we're very close to the flowers, but there aren't any flowers to see or smell or feel. But sometimes but it's on the way to. It can be a good way to. We're easily following the calling from there in that state. It's easy for what can follow our practice to feel the call and be led. And so then in that, let's say in between state, not awake, not asleep state, it can happen that a seeming dream or daydream actually does lead into a meditation, into a meditative energy, a release of creative energy, which often would be where the release of creative energy also releases something stuck in you. But we don't need to know. And we really don't need to know, because if I would know, I would get all wrapped up into it. And also, I'm not there to know what's happening. And so it's experienced somewhere, but not in our usual conscious place. And so through resting, there starts to be more awakeness, not in an over-awake kind of way, but more awakeness in that deeper, or those deeper layers, to be able to then enjoy more fully being called into meditation. And it's the image of lying under the cherry tree, maybe sleeping for a few months, and then the petals falling on the face. Is that light of a kind of, like, did that, was that was something, was it something? That can happen. And it's also not to say that, okay, let's not do the negative. In the not asleep, not awake, many times it's good to let it float by itself. And then also sometimes it's good that we might find that we slightly bring energy somewhere like the lower belly, even though there's hardly a sense of space, body, up, down, me, you. So it's not to say never do anything there. Sometimes there is a slight allowing to gather also, or allowing to open. So being susceptible, being willing to also bring some deliberate, some on-purpose practice into that when it's possible. It's often not possible, because as soon as there's any sense of a possible doing, then the doer is taking over. Did you want to ask more? Okay. Susceptible is like if someone laughs in the hall, then it's easy for other people to laugh. We're, especially on retreat, if I'm like under pressure or really relaxed and feeling at home, either way, it would be easy for me to start laughing too. I'm susceptible to the laughter. So I thought we could continue with the Joy Child poem. Did you have something to say? Go for it.
It's about questions. Yesterday, I had a question, and I didn't ask it. I could have asked it.
I was wondering where the question was.
It's not as if
I was, I'm not joking.
You were wondering about my yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And
it would have been a good joke, but I wasn't.
It would have been a good joke.
It would have been a good joke, but in this case, I wasn't.
I got part answer today. And when you're talking about doing our own practice and how I learn to trust more the question, however anything may seem as like, oh, it's a silly question, or you know, look it up in the book, or ask Jaya.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that process of asking a question, and then, wow, the answer that came was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real door. It was a door.
Great.
Opened.
Great.
And yesterday, I just.
Great example and
yeah.
Wonderful.
And you also said you, when I asked you about sitting up, I asked you early on about
oh, yeah.
Putting your hands on your buttocks. And all I can say about it is that it feels very, it feels like very grounding and sort of quite powerful. And really
Well, what it is this week is something different from what it has been before.
But in the book,
what? In the book, I think it's more interesting what it is this week. And we can also say the book. So she is talking about sitting on hands. Like, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, like...
You do it like that, like,
and mm-hmm. That way as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, just,
yeah. Yeah. And this week, it's funny, and it's very funny to say also, but this week it seems very important, that area of the body. And it seems very important not only for the grounding, but also because there's been a bigness about this week. And it's like it comes from down here, and it's really funny because it's like almost has the same shape, like the buttocks, going like this. Bigger than the hall, a little bit, has been our retreat shape. And having that much space. And letting there be bigness already in our experience of ourselves, of life. So that's this week, whatever that is. In the book, it's called 25. And it's quiet. It's called, the name is Quietly Regenerating, Quietly Energizing. The book, it is also literally in the book, and it's also meaning like, what is the tradition of when we've been doing hold a finger or do this? It's called Jinshin Jutsu from Japan. And there is a book or two of Jinshin Jutsu. And in the book, it's called 25. So, but it means that the word name is quietly energizing. So if we feel dull and sleepy, then that's good. It helps the energy come. You were made for joy, child. The feet of you were carved for that. The ankles of you run for that. The rise of rain. So a poet is allowed to talk about the rise of rain. The shift of the wind. The drop of a red star on a far water rim. So the natural movements that happen by themselves, including how what comes down also comes up, the shift of the wind in the leaves. How do we know the wind shifts? We can see what it moves, we can feel. It moves the air. The drop of a red star, something that looks tiny and is huge and is so far away. An endless catalog of shouts, laughters, silent contemplations. So these things that are happening by themselves that don't seem to have anything to do with you. And it's endless, all these things that are happening by themselves, including shouts. Today was really lovely when some of the young people from the ashram went to kindly ask the workers to quiet down, and then one of them, I don't know if you heard, you might have been half asleep, half awake, one of them was like, woo-hoo! In response to being told to be quiet. Wouldn't you? Laughters and silent contemplations. So contemplation, it could be meditation, or it could be reflecting on in silence. It could be just a place without words, a time without words. They made you from day to day for joy, child. We get a bit caught up in how much our parents did to us and didn't, and the sense of being related to and made by, for joy, child. Well, and again we have a he, maybe this time I'll make it a she. Well, she sat up and said to herself, this is good, I will go to it. So this is the response of Carl Sandburg for your question. Well, we sit up and say to ourselves, this is good, I will go to it. Till then, now this is going to be tricky, get ready. Till then, we had been satisfied with ourselves. After a week of retreat, you would say, that's the last thing I've ever been with myself. I wish I could feel satisfied with myself. but a way that, because the pressure is so high, often inside, and we so much fall on our face and it all keeps being a mess and not how we wanted and the disappointment again, or it's going really right and then the pressure comes, like, oh, I've got to keep this up. What did I do right? Or what did they do? You know, whatever. Give it to me again. Let's go on and you'll hear what he means. Till then, we've been satisfied with ourselves. That would be like, we're willing to take an offer of a job that's going to kill us because we never get it right anyway. Now there came back an old unrest on a deep rest retreat. And again, carried over from a grandfather he had failed, to live up to. So where there's someone that shows you what's possible as a human being, and it's hard to be with that. Because you're not. And you can. And you're not. And you can. And it's hard to trust that, the calling towards. Partly because it's so terrible to face can and not. And it's so sweet, mostly, the calling. And when it's painful, it's not a bad pain. And then it's sweet. And it's lightening and it's rising. It's so not work. It's so not an occupation. Usually, if we would think of failure, we can't actually stand it to think of failure. And so we be a failure. We be occupied with being a failure. Or we be occupied with proving that we're not, etc. But when failure is in it, it's in it. It's not escapable. And can allow all of our trying in the ways that don't help to fall down, to be failure. It doesn't work. Let's admit it didn't work, it doesn't work, and it will not work. And so then what? Leaving space, and then, whoa, too much energy. She had a hunch. So a hunch. I think it's going to be so much easier to just translate to German. Does anyone who speaks German know what hunch is in German? Again, loudly. Okay.
A sense for something, right? Sensing something.
Without being sure where it came from or where exactly it's going. So it would be like... It's not even quite intuition, because intuition is often very verbal. It's definitely more down here. It's not verbal. It can use some words to help us go a little bit more that way. It's okay? I really don't know a Spanish word for that. I think we would say intuición, but it is not quite that. It would say more than a sentence. Or He had a hunch, she had a hunch, we had a hunch, a new hunch, another and another. So this is Jane's like, wow, like stuck, and then didn't ask the question. Waiting. It's also in the poem where there's the hidden bird with the two clear notes and then the reply that's clear from our bigness. Instead of ideas, whims, which is como capricho, what would be whim in German?
Caprice.
Like, oh, I feel like. A whim is a hunch. Also hasn't words. I mean, it hasn't words, but the whim can have is definitely more verbal, and it's light, but not in a serious way. It's light, like, huh. Not like, what else would you do? What else could you possibly want to do with yourself or your life? But like, oh, they're doing that, I'll go do that. Or, oh yeah, one time somebody said, when they were riding a horse, I think I'll go ride a horse. Instead of ideas, whims, she had hunches. So she said, this is good. I will go to it. May our beings rest in that goodness. Gently, slowly, intensely, with all our love of living beyond birth and death. May we give ourselves to it, feeling this is good. May our practice and our lives be dedicated to awakening for all, here and now.